we're joined by Wisconsin cartoonist, painter, writer, teacher, and all-around ball of energy, Linda Berry.
She's the creator of the indie hit Ernie Pook's comic and the Eisner Award-winning book What It Is, and she's got a novel in the works. Linda joins us now to talk about why anyone who can write the alphabet can create cartoons and how to awaken your inner artist. Linda, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
So nice to see you. It's been a long time.
It has.
And you've been busy. You're always very busy, but you've got some new projects underway. Mentioned a novel going on. You've got a book called Syllabus coming out in the fall, and you've also been thinking about art, as you always do, and how some people, you say, get confused and they think that they can't draw.
Mm-hmm.
Can anybody draw?
Well, everybody does draw. I mean, they don't necessarily have a pencil or a marker in their hand when they're doing it, but if you watch people talk, they're gesturing, and drawing is basically movement. It's gesture. But there's two kinds of drawing, and there's rendering, which not very many people are that good at, or they feel like if they're trying to make a chair look like the chair that they can see and that everybody else in the room can see. But there's another kind that's cartooning, making comics, that's much more related to, I say it's related to the alphabet. Anybody who can draw the alphabet can draw all the shapes they need to make comics. But my interest in it really peaked when I started working at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery. And on Saturday Science, the first Saturday of every month, I work with kids, little kids. And I found that you can just ask them the most basic scientific questions. And for example, one of the things was draw what your brain looks like, and then now draw your mind. And the stuff that they came up with was really astonishing. But while I was looking at their drawing upstairs at the at WID, there are whiteboards everywhere, and there are all these scientists, and the whiteboards are covered with these formulas and drawings. And I started to see this incredible similarity between the quality of line that the scientists were doing and the quality of line that the kids were doing downstairs. And I started, and so much so, and I was telling people, and people wouldn't believe me, so I'd take pictures and show them side by side. And it makes people gasp when they see how alike they are. And I started to think, what if this thing that we are calling childish drawing is what a line looks like when we're getting an idea and explaining it, which is, again, you know, tied to gesture. And if people understood that, would they be more willing to draw? That, oh, I guess this is what it's supposed to look like. And especially if you can separate it from rendering. That was the prize that Paul Klee was after, or Matisse was after. And Picasso was said to, you know, all these other guys, Dubuffet, Klee, Matisse, they loved kids' drawings, but Picasso liked to watch kids draw. And so one of the things I did was I found a video clip of Picasso drawing and a video clip of a 7-year-old drawing, and I intercut them, and there you saw it. You saw the same kind of line. So I know people can do it, but they have to somehow make that shift in their head from rendering kind of drawing to cartooning.
Well, as somebody who stopped drawing after whatever grade school art class, I think there was a fear developing, I'm going to draw it wrong.
Right.
Is that what I've got to get out of my mind to get myself to draw again?
And it was probably around adolescence when this happened.
Yes. Yeah. How did you know?
Well, because it's a weird cognitive development point, but also there's at adolescence we're very, very aware of not wanting to be kids. Not wanting to be. And, you know, we've all laughed at kids. You both have children. Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't be strange for your 8-year-old to say, when I was little.
He does say that.
Yeah. Right? And we laugh. But there is this really interesting thing that happens at adolescence where people don't want to be kids anymore. And if the line that they're making can be identified as childish, that line that I'm talking about, that spontaneous line that when somebody's getting an idea, that's one reason you don't do it. You know, another reason is you really do see that realistic drawing exists and you can't do it. And you don't necessarily know there are other kinds of drawings. Interestingly enough, people do, almost everybody has something like a doodle that they all do that you all feel good at. You know, people tell me they can't draw. I said, was there something you doodle? It's like eyeballs. You know, or palm trees, or the cube, you know, or the spiral. So that little vestigial tale of drawing, I feel like my job is to just draw it out, pull it out, and get people drawing again, because there are certain kinds of ideas that you can have. certain things you can figure out by drawing that it's so much faster than trying to figure it out just by thinking.
Yeah, you said that we can use drawing to answer difficult questions. Mm-hmm. What kind of questions, and how do you use drawing to crack open those questions?
Well, for instance, let's see, I'm trying to think of an example of, okay, so one of the questions I asked the kids during Saturday Science was, what do our brains do while we sleep? What are dreams? And so you can sit and kind of talk about it abstractly. Once they started to draw it, and that's the other thing about kids that's really interesting, that kids oftentimes find out what they're drawing as they're drawing it. So, and I think that's another thing that has in common with getting a good idea. When somebody's getting struck by a good idea and you're in a good conversation, you don't sit quietly until you have the idea all thought out and then you lay it on the person. It's happening simultaneously. So while the kids were drawing their answers, the stories that were coming up were much more interesting. For instance, one little girl who was 5, her name is Wendy, she said, well, dreams. She goes, things happen to you during the day. All kinds of things happen. And then at night when you sleep, you don't get to pick, but some of those things come back. That's true. And then she said, and the dreams that you have over and over again are the most private.
Hmm.
And I'm looking at her like, you're 5 and you're Carl Jung. So, but part of it was because she drew the answer out. And so one of the research projects I'm working on now at the Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery, I have a lab now, if you can believe
wow,
it.
Fancy.
It's called the Image Lab.
Are there beakers?
You know what? They're drawings of beakers.
Excellent.
but I have a grad student who's brilliant, Ebony Flowers, and she's using drawing to help people write their PhDs. And it's not so much that the drawing's going to help, that's going to appear in your PhD, although some of that's happening, but to help you have a new take on a big problem, particularly problems where the language is abstract. And there's no time, that's academic papers kind of have no time when they're taking place, no body in there. And so so I'm really excited about drawing, and I'm really excited with getting people who are sure they can't draw to draw again.
Do you do this with grown-ups?
I sure do.
So how do they react? How big a barrier is there to get them going on drawing?
There's no barrier at all. What you have to do is you have to have a timer, and you have to be a crazy straw boss like I am. So one of the things we do, it's actually from a colleague of mine, Ivan Brunetti, who's a great cartoonist. We fold a piece of paper into 4, and then I tell them in the first panel to draw Batman for 1 minute. And everybody's like, oh, I don't know what he looks like, but everybody can draw Batman. Then the second one, they have to draw him for 30 seconds. And then 15 seconds, and then 5 seconds. And everyone can do it. But because they're moving so fast, it calls into play that thing that I'm talking about where it's about getting an idea down rather than making a nice drawing. And if you can get people to do that, it's remarkable what they're able to do.
It's interesting to think of drawing in terms of ideas and not in terms of this looks like, you know, mm-hmm. like you said, like a chair. I think that must free people up a little bit because ideas don't have to look like anything. They're just ideas.
Right. Well, the side effect of this, that's the thing I always tell my students, we are practicing a physical activity with a certain state of mind. The physical activity in this case is drawing. And the side effect of doing it might be a good drawing. But the state of mind that it brings about is the central reason to do it. I'm really, really excited about it. And also the other thing I'm excited about is how people get giddy when they're doing it because they're so kind of happy and scared at the same time. And I was trying to figure out especially when I say, okay, now draw Batman in 15 seconds, you can feel the room just get really lively. And then I realized how else have I heard that sound? It's when people are going into a spook house. Mm-hmm. That kind of like, you know? So that's a thrill. I mean, all you have is a flare pen and a piece of paper, and you're suddenly going, you know?
The thrill of drawing.
That's wireless communication.
Well, we're talking right now with Linda Berry. She's a cartoonist, illustrator, the author of 17 books, and the creator of the popular Writing the Unthinkable workshop series.
And we're taking your questions and your thoughts for Linda Berry. Do you need help waking up your inner artist? Have you done something like this? Tried drawing for the first time in 20 years and found it liberating or inspiring? How do you express creativity in the midst of your daily grind? Or do you wish you could? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800 800- 1-800-642-1234 or post on our Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up with playwright, illustrator, cartoonist, novelist Linda Barry right now. Her latest is the Eisner Award-winning book called What It Is, and Linda lives and works right here in Wisconsin.
And we're taking your questions and your thoughts for Linda Barry now. Are you looking for inspiration to try to get creative, drawing, writing, singing, you name it? Or did you take the plunge at some point in the last 5-10 years and we're glad you did? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller with Chris on the line in Sparta. Chris, hi there.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, when I was a kid, I was really, really talented at drawing, painting, any kind of artwork, basically anything creative. And I kind of stopped. I went more into the physical world of doing more sports, extreme sports, and that kind of thing. And it got to the point where now I'm in the real world with a job, and I can't afford to get hurt so much. So I'm looking for more kind of indoor hobbies. And I tried to start drawing and painting again, and it's like night and day. I'm terrible. I can't paint. I can't draw. I've hit like a painter's block, a drawer's block. I was wondering if you have any tips on how to get inspired to bring back a skill that you used to have.
Chris, stay on the line in case Dr. Linda needs more follow-up for her prescription here.
Chris, well, you know, one of the things that I'm hearing when I hear you talk about that was that when you were younger, and again, my guess is it's probably before you were, you know, when you were a young person, that doing that made you really happy. And it also kind of gave you a sense of identity and that people could tell you were a good artist. And then now, at the whatever age you are, now the hard part to remember is that the kind of drawing, again, it's this idea of rendering or doing something, you know, making a good representational drawing. That drawing is very, very difficult, and it gets more difficult as you get older. But cartooning is always available for you. And even to just, you know, to find a way to draw something that makes you actually feel sort of good. And the thing that I always tell people to do is draw, you know, trace their hand and make that. Remember that Thanksgiving turkey?
Yes.
Yeah, with the top hat. And then if you put a little cigarette coming out of his mouth. Smoking in real life is bad, but a turkey smoking is funny. So see how you're feeling better right now? And all you're doing is imagining. That's the kind of drawing that I'm talking about. That's the drawing I'm the most interested in. And cartooning is really is such a good way to go. There's such interesting stuff being done with it now, especially if you can go more toward a loose style rather than trying to do like Superman or Spider-Man, even though those are boss. I love them. But, you know, it's hard because it's sort of like going back to a place, you know, like you had a really good time at, and you go back a couple years later and it's the same place, but it doesn't feel the same. And so your relationship with drawing has changed, but it doesn't mean that drawing's not there for you and can't come back. It absolutely can, but you're going to have to be able to stand it, to stand what's coming out of your hand for a while. I don't know if you're old enough to remember hearing your voice for the first time on a tape or a recording and how strange it sounded.
Yes.
Yeah.
I sing as well, so for me, every time I listen to a recording I do of me playing guitar and singing, I can't stand to listen to myself.
It's the same thing. So, but when you're singing and your voice is in your head, you can stand to do it. I mean, otherwise, I mean, it gives you something. So the trick is to switch it so that I always tell people to draw something and throw it away or light it on fire. It's always fun to light stuff on fire. but the main thing is the drawing for me, it's there. Again, I think it has a biological function. I think it has something to do with our immune system, but for another part of us. And if you can look at it that way, instead of something that's good or bad, then you can benefit from what drawing can be.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience. And looks like you've got a prescription now from Linda Barry. So get that turkey going a little early, but it sounds like fun. And Linda, I just want to riff off what you said just there about how you think it's part of the immune function.
And I think it's a corollary to our immune system.
A corollary to it. What do you mean by that?
I mean to say that that we know that the immune system is one of the ways that keeps our body going. I think it's actually kidneys are a closer comparison. And I think that Well, I started to get interested in it when I started to read about similarities of certain, and you know, fMRIs are kind of, they can show a lot of different things, but there was a similarity in a certain kind of pattern in an adult's brain when they were in a state of creative concentration, in a kid's brain when they were in a state of deep play. And deep play is, it's that we've all seen it where the kids don't look like they're having fun, but they don't look like they're not having fun. They're absorbed. So when I found out that there was something similar about these states of mind, then I had a clue about creativity. And it was this. We all know that a kid who's never allowed to play ever until like till the age of 18, they can have everything else, but they're never allowed to play till the age of 18. We know that they're going to have some problems. We could say mental problems and emotional problems. And if we say, well, you can't play, but here's a picture of a kid playing Lego. Look at it. That ain't going to help. And here's a DVD. Let's watch. Don't move. But watch this kid playing Lego. He's really good. That's not going to do it. And go lie. We'll sit next to this kid. You can't play, but you can watch him.
That's kinetic.
Yeah, it's kinetic. It's having it involved. But that state is the state of most adults now. We look at pictures. Mm. We watch a DVD. Maybe we'll go to a live concert. But we somehow think that unless we're really good at something in the arts, after a certain age, we don't have the right to do it anymore. And I say it's sort of like thinking you can't ride a bike because you can't ride like Lance Armstrong, who it turns out even he couldn't ride like Lance Armstrong. You know, I mean, that's the difficulty. And it's what Chris kind of was talking about wanting to make this stuff, but being dismayed by what he's making, you know.
We'll go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Tom in La Crosse. Hi there, Tom.
Hi. I would suggest that a cartoon versus a rendering would be similar to writing a novel versus poetry. I mean, cutting core of the issue with the fewest words or lines that you can.
You know, I think you've really nailed it in a lot of ways. That there is a lot in common with poetry and comics, and part of it is that you get them. Well, see, poetry for me gets wrecked when I start thinking too hard about it. And it's the same thing with comics. You know, comics happen really fast. They're sort of instantaneous when you get it or get a joke. It's a different part of the mind. It's a different part of thinking. I'd say a joke is similar, too. It's the difference between a novel and a joke. But I don't know. Rendering is its own thing. It's its own beautiful thing. But it is very different than this other kind of work that I'm talking about.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your question, Tom, or your comment there on the way to think about cartooning. And like you said, most grown-ups are in the space where you're the kid who doesn't get to play.
Yeah.
You sit on the sidelines. What do you think adults can do to infuse their lives back with active art again, with actually diving fully in and being immersive instead of just watching?
Well, for one thing, you have to believe that it has a function other than making something that's gorgeous, that people will like you because of it. I really think that once the best success I've had with getting people back into creative action is to convince them that it has this biological function. So how do you do that? Well, you bring up interesting research. And so one interesting research that happened here in Wisconsin, it actually was started by a guy, his last name was Beck, and it's called the Beck spit test. You can look it up online, the Beck spit test. He became very interested, I think he's from California, he became very interested in what happens when people sing in groups. So, of course, they tested professional choral singers somewhere in California. Then they repeated it in Zurich. And then there was some interest in regular old people. And so they went to Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they tested students who just liked to sing together. And what they were testing was, why it was called the spit test, is that the cortisol levels that correspond to stress levels in your body show up in your spit pretty fast. So they test the spit before they sang and after, and it was measurable,
wow,
the difference. But what was really cool was if the singer reported getting into it, it was profound. And it wasn't just the cortisol level, it was also an immune system marker. So this idea, I think about it, WID, and all these people are trying to find drugs to patent, and the idea that singing can do this. And we know that stress is a huge, huge problem. Stress really does kill. A similar study was repeated, except for just not just with singers, They had a group of people also write, and another group of people paint. The median age in this group was 80. It was done at George Washington University, and it was over 3 years. And these 80-year-olds who had stopped doing all this work started doing these things again. They had, over those 3 years, they had 30 fewer doctor visits. They had way fewer falls. Their eyesight actually didn't deteriorate as rapidly.
Wow, that's kind of amazing. Yeah. So,
then it gets interesting, right?
Then it gets interesting.
It's like statins or draw a comic. You know, I mean, I wouldn't recommend stop drawing comics and stop taking your statins, but that there's a lot of research about, and I don't think we would have dragged our urge for the arts through all our evolutionary stages if it didn't have a survival function.
And it doesn't matter necessarily which kind of creativity. It could be the cartooning, it could be the singing, pottery making, I don't know.
Yeah, but what seems to matter is you getting absorbed, that there's a feeling of being absorbed, that state of mind that I'm talking about, you know, and it has... I think there's something to do with movement, and definitely I'm interested in the original digital devices, our hands, you know.
Excellent. Well, Linda, thank you so much for joining us. I think everyone's got some fresh inspiration to get out there.
Oh, I love coming on your show. I love
back
to
into
see
the art.
You.
Oh, it's so great to have you again, too. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Linda Berry, an award-winning cartoonist, author, writer, you name it, she's probably done it. She lives and works in Wisconsin. She's got a new book coming out in the fall, by the way, and it's called Syllabus, and hopefully you'll be back on then.
Yeah.
To talk about that.